And now, a warrior for the Word of God and the Constitution of the United States, a Marine Corps veteran, a Harvard-trained attorney, Bishop of the Called Churches, and founder and president of STAND. Staying true to America's national destiny, the voice of the awakening, your host, Bishop E.W. Jackson.
And I am he. Great to be with you again today, folks. Hope you're enjoying your Friday and getting ready for a wonderful weekend. It's the fall. For those of you who have been in very hot climates, it's cooling off a little bit. And if you got a nice sunny day with about 70, 80 degree temperatures, that's beautiful. You know, I love going outdoors, and there's some woods not far from my home, and I like exploring the woods and being out there and, you know, doing some shooting and that kind of thing. And during the summer, I didn't get out very much because it's like a sauna when it's in the mid and upper 90s. Woo! No thank you. You know, you've got the bugs and the everything else to contend with. And it's, but the spring, oh wow! I mean, when you've got a nice breeze blowing and it's mid to upper 70s, maybe low 80s, and the humidity is low. Oh my goodness! That's a beautiful thing. So, but you know, the interesting thing here in Southeast Virginia, what we've experienced was. The spring was beautiful. I mean, it really was really nice. But when it turned hot somewhere in June, I mean, it just stayed hot. And suddenly the temperature has dropped dramatically. So it's almost like we went from summer to late fall. I think the temperature this morning was in the mid 60s. I'm waiting for that little burst of spring, you know, where the weather's really nice and really pleasant. So I can get some outdoors time. So I don't know what you enjoy doing, but whatever it is, enjoy it. Do it. In the age of COVID, it really is nice to be able to get outdoors and not have anybody walking up to you saying, get your mask up. Your mask is not covering your nose. You know, that's one of the reasons why I wear the mask, folks. I'm not absolutely convinced that it's really making a difference, but I can't prove that it's not. And in consideration of others, I wear the mask. But in part, I wear the mask because I don't want anybody coming up to me, getting in my face, telling me, you've got to wear a mask. I'd just rather not have to have that happen. So I just put on the mask would rather put on the mask and not have to deal with that. I don't know how you all feel about that. Well, look, this is First Amendment Friday, and that means any topic that you want to talk about is on the table. The number is 888-589-8840. I want to get to your calls as early as I can, so there are plenty of open lines right now. And on the table is anything that we've talked about this week or anything that you've wanted to talk about. For those of you who have not been able to get in, we're going to have a lot more time today, so maybe you can get in if you've missed me and have not been able to get through in the past. If you're a first-time caller, if you've never called in before but you've wanted to, or maybe you've tried but never gotten through, we can get you in today because I'd love hearing from first-time callers. And by the way, if you are one of those people who does not agree with me, I really do want to hear from you. I love talking to people who don't, as long as you can be respectful and all of that, because I just think it's interesting for us to talk to each other rather than what we're seeing in the streets of our cities today, which is people screaming and yelling and cursing and attacking. Have you all been watching this? I mean, this stuff has gotten out of hand. I saw, I think it was on one of the news programs last night, a bunch of people up in the face of this police officer, I mean, sticking their finger in his face with a vulgar gesture and screaming at him and yelling at him and calling him names. This particular police officer that I saw happened to be a black police officer which again is proof positive that Black Lives Matter is not about saving or respecting black life. It is about a Marxist, socialist, communist agenda for this country, and race is simply the patina, the veneer that they drape over it to make everybody bow and kowtow to it and say, oh, yes, 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 we understand. We've got to stop racial injustice. Let me tell you something. I'll put the justice of this nation up against any nation that exists on the face of the earth right now. And I'll tell you something else that needs to be said. Anybody in the United States of America, anybody in the United States of America, I don't care what the color of the person's skin is. If you are willing to work hard, if you're willing to get an education, learn a skill, if you are willing to be a decent person and be disciplined about carrying out your responsibilities on a job, and if you got a vision for doing something better, for starting a business, building a business, creating something for yourself that will enrich your life and the lives of others and maybe help you better take care of a family, if you want to do that in America, you can. You can. And anybody who tells you you can't is lying to you. Because they don't want you to try. They don't want you to succeed. They don't want you to achieve anything. They want you convinced that your only alternative is to deal drugs or go run the streets like a crazy person and hurt people and scream and yell about how victimized you are. That's what they want. They don't want you to succeed. But I am proof positive, and there are millions of others like me who will tell you, anybody who wants to do something positive with your life in the United States of America cannot be stopped. And in fact, if anything, that person will be encouraged in every possible way by people across all racial and cultural lines. That's the way our country actually works. You would think that people like Oprah Winfrey and LeBron James and Dr. J and Spike Lee, who have experienced what I've just described to you, would be the first to come out and tell everybody that. But oh, no, no, no. They're too busy whining in their racial angst. They're too busy obsessed with the color of their skin. And because they are, they think everybody else is too. Well, I've got news for them. Most people aren't. Most people in America today really could care less. They just don't care about that. They care about the decency of the individual. They care about how people behave themselves and how people conduct themselves, not what color the person's skin is. Well, there's that. And I don't know whether you saw this, but encouraging that Charles Barkley and Shaq O'Neal said that the Breonna Taylor situation cannot be compared to George Floyd. The reason, as they point out, and I said yesterday, is that Breonna Taylor's boyfriend shot at the police. Now, we could debate the no-knock warrant, we could debate the procedure, and yes, it may be that mistakes were made. I hope all of that will come out. But once somebody opens fire on cops, what are they supposed to do? And once a police officer has been actually shot, which a police officer was, shot by Breonna Taylor's boyfriend, what are the police supposed to do? They don't have any choice. They've got to fire back. And unfortunately, she was in the crossfire there and tragically lost her life. And that's no doubt it's a sad situation because she's apparently a person who was really trying to do something positive with her life. Unfortunately, she was in the middle of the wrong place at the wrong time, so to speak. And apparently with the wrong person who made a judgment about his own safety and hers, and his judgment turned out to be the wrong one. You could argue the police made the wrong judgment, too, by entering into that house expecting to find a former boyfriend who wasn't there. We'll be back in a moment to take your calls.
This is Viewpoints with Kirby Anderson. We're a divided country, but it may be worse than we imagined. An article in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences discussed what is called motive attribution asymmetry. That's a technical term for the assumption that your ideology is based in love and your opponent's is based on hate. Put another way, we're the good guys, they're the bad guys. They discovered that the average Republican and the average Democrat today are as divided as the Palestinians and Israelis. In his op-ed in the New York Times, Arthur Brooks says we see the other side as an enemy with whom one cannot negotiate or compromise. He comes to this startling conclusion. People often say that our problem in America is incivility or intolerance. He says that's incorrect. Motive attribution asymmetry leads to something far worse, contempt, which is a noxious brew of anger and disgust. And it is made worse by what he calls the outrage industrial complex that oftentimes caters to one side and criticizes the other. Now, when people hear about political conflicts, they often prescribe the wrong solutions. Just because we disagree doesn't mean we should put aside our disagreements. Arthur Brooks instead says that we need not disagree less. Instead, we need to disagree better. Whether we're discussing politics, economics, or philosophy, we should engage in a robust competition of ideas. We can disagree without being so disagreeable. So he suggests two steps. First, turn away from what he calls the rhetorical dope peddlers. These are powerful people on your side who are profiting from the culture of contempt. Second, make a commitment never to treat others with contempt. Christians should be civil and gracious. I'm Kirby Anderson, and that's my point of view.
For a free copy of Kirby's booklet, A Biblical View on Antisemitism, go to viewpoints.info/antisemitism. Viewpoints.info/antisemitism.
You know, it's true. Difficult times have a way of focusing us. We have to think about what matters most when it comes to our spending, our healthcare. No doubt, this is why so many people are joining MediShare right now. MediShare is a trusted way to save up to 50% on your monthly healthcare costs. More than 400,000 people have already made the switch. It's pretty obvious why, too, especially now during this challenging season with healthcare costs and out-of-pocket expenses going up. MediShare can save you a lot of money. The typical family saves $500 a month. And MediShare is a Christian healthcare sharing ministry that's worked beautifully for 27 years. There are different options to choose from to fit your budget. I'll give you the number here in a second. And if you call, you can get a price within 2 minutes. Maybe now is the perfect time to make the switch and start saving. Here you go. Call 833-44-BIBLE. That's 833-44-BIBLE. 833-44-BIBLE.
Brian Fisher here. More proof that mail-in vote fraud is a real thing. The emasculation of America continues. Wait till you hear the latest. Stats from the CDC prove the coronavirus pandemic is over. Dr. Fauci just doesn't want you to know. What are the youth of America learning from watching the riots? And it's Free for All Friday on the phones, next on Focal Point.
The Awakening.
The Awakening.
Download and listen at your leisure with the podcast page at AFR.net. Now, back to our host, Bishop E.W. Jackson.
By the way, one of those two officers shot in L.A. County was Robinson DeRoche, one of the two officers that the protesters, so-called, they're nothing but mobsters. And I mean that literally. They're not just a mob, they're mobsters who stood around in front of the hospital chanting, "We hope you die." Well, Robinson DeRoche happens to be a black police officer. The other officer has gotten back to duty, apparently reported for roll call, I think yesterday morning, doing much, much better, thank God. And Robinson DeRoche is going to be fine too. But he happens to be a black police officer, which once again, I only bring this up to prove that Black Lives Matter is not at all about black life. It's not at all. It's not about black people. It is about Marxism and socialism and communism, and they're simply using race to advance their agenda. A Unitarian church was a sanctuary for the protesters in Louisville, I think last night, and when they got to the church, this is a Unitarian church, they've got a great big sign, Black Lives Matter, up there. You know, the Unitarian church is famous for believing absolutely nothing. I don't even know why they call themselves a church, because they're really not. Yeah, they don't believe in God. They don't believe in the Bible. I don't believe they believe in much of anything but themselves. And I'm not even sure they believe in themselves. But at any rate, when people piled in there, apparently the black folks in the church who were part of this whole mobster crowd started commanding the white people to leave. So it can only be a sanctuary for black people. It can't be a sanctuary for any of the white people. Now, all the people engaged in this stuff are fools, frankly. All of them. I'm talking about engaged in the violence and the mayhem and the hatred and the assaulting police and spitting at police and calling police names and sticking their fingers in their faces. All these people are complete and total fools. But, you know, you got to be an even bigger fool to be a part of something in which you are hated even while you support it. Which, again, just goes to show, folks, if the root is evil, the fruit is evil. A good tree can't bear bad fruit, but an evil tree, a bad tree, can't bear good fruit. And this Black Lives Matter stuff and all this Antifa stuff, that's a bad tree that simply cannot bear good fruit. It's impossible. So I want to encourage you all, forgive this little commercial here, but go to our website, standamerica.us, and support the All Lives Matter movement. Because all lives do matter. And I'm tired of people being called racist and being told you can't say that because somehow saying that is wrong. I mean, that's one of the dumbest things of the many dumb things that leftists say. All lives matter is racist. Don't say, are you kidding me? In God's sight, all lives matter, and he doesn't value one life above another. And that's the way it is. And so the All Lives Matter movement is going to take a stand. We're going to be doing a number of things between now and the election to educate Christian voters, particularly on the worldview that ought to motivate and propel us to vote. It can't be this racial demagoguery. It simply cannot. And by the way, one other thing, I've given up on professional sports in America for the time being until we get some professional teams. This guy, Mark Jones, said that he's a commentator for ESPN, so he's giving up his personal security, he said, because he doesn't want his personal security. A police officer provides personal security for these personalities. He doesn't want the police officer to end up shooting him because he's black. I mean, this is the idiotic tripe that's coming out of the mouths of people in the media who are influencing others with that poison. All right, the number is 888-589-8840. I'm so glad to get started early. Everything's on the table for today. This is First Amendment Friday, so whatever's on your mind, bring it up. Let's go to Julio in Texas. Julio, welcome.
Dude, I'm on first. That's cool. What's up, Vicious? How you doing, man?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Awesome. Man, I'm good. We're working right now. I'm ready to have lunch, so yeah. But hey, man, I want to run something by you real quick. As a Harvard alumni, I don't know if you would have any information on this, but I think a good solution for the police brutality, quote unquote, would be to have ride-alongs. You know, somebody similar to jury duty. You know, you have to be summoned by the court or whatever. Don't know how that works because I've never had jury duty, but I need people to see from that cop's perspective. You know, and I think it should be a job every citizen needs to do. You know, give them some body armor. You got to do it for a day with a cop, and you know, you go and you know, just have their back.
And I about it, forgive me. I said Julio. I should have said because I was thinking Julia, but I should have said Julio.
Julio says, but look,
you're absolutely right. And by the way, I've done ride-alongs, and you get an education. You get an education. You get a chance to see what these police officers go through. You know, Julio, the sad thing is, I think some of these people are so brainwashed that they wouldn't do it if you asked them to and gave them the opportunity to, because they don't want to see it from the police officer's perspective. They only want to see it from their own prejudiced and biased and bigoted perspective. And you know, we've said this before. It's like a cult where facts and truth simply don't matter. They just don't. So, but I love the idea. I've done it, and I would encourage anybody to do it, because it definitely is an eye opener. So, Julio, thanks for the call. Appreciate it. I don't know whether you're law enforcement, Julio. Are you still there?
No, I'm not. No, sir. I'm okay. A construction worker, man. But I'm 29 years old. My father-in-law is a white dude. I'm a Mexicano. You know, it's racism is a fabrication of the mind. They need to quit with all that, man. But where I'm getting at is to where the government can make it mandatory for people. You know, if not, pay a $500 fine or like $200 fine. And, you know, if you don't do that, if you don't pay the fine, you got to spend like a week in jail or something like that. is that probable?
Okay, Julio. Well, listen, man, thank you so much for the call. I think people have probably had enough of mandates right now, because those of us who'd be willing to do it don't need to be mandated. And those of us who wouldn't be willing to do it probably wouldn't do it even if you mandated it and then charged them a fine. So, but thank you for the call, Julio. We appreciate it. Let's go to Eric in Texas. Eric, welcome.
Hello. How are you doing today?
Doing great, Eric. How are you?
Just a little distraught hearing about everything that's been going on.
It's a little distressing.
You're telling me. But I just wanted to ask, as believers in God, how can we handle all of these riots? How do we convince people that this isn't the right way to do things, specifically the rioters themselves? How can we change their hearts?
Yeah, wow. Eric, you've asked the question that really goes to the heart of most of our social problems, because let's face it, that's where they begin. They begin in the sinfulness of the human heart. Jesus said, out of the heart, evil speakings and behavior come. And he said, a good man out of the good treasure of his heart brings forth good things. An evil man out of the evil treasure of his heart brings forth evil things. And only God can really change the heart. I have to be honest with you, from my perspective right now, we really do need a legal but very, very strict crackdown on all of this violence and all of this mayhem that's being created. And we just simply need to put a stop to it. Just say, you know, if you're going to do that, if you're going to create disorder, if you're going to destroy property, if you're going to threaten to hurt people, we're going to fine you, we're going to arrest you, we're going to charge you, we're going to put you in jail, and we're going to keep doing that until we've done that with everybody who is out here in the streets making things difficult for all the law-abiding citizens. And I think we just have to gear up and prepare for it, because right now we've got a movement of lawlessness. You know, Jesus predicted this. He said, because lawlessness would abound, the love of many would grow cold. And basically, we're in that era now where lawlessness is abounding. And as a result, people are becoming hard-hearted. Here again, I saw some of the video yesterday of these so-called protesters attacking people's cars as they went by, trying to block them in and then trying to pull the drivers out so they could beat them senseless or kill them. Something's got to give. And I think before people's hearts are changed right now, we've got to make sure that the law-abiding citizens of our country are safe to go anywhere they want to go without fear of being caught in the middle of some kind of so-called protest, which is really nothing more than a bunch of thugs and criminals and lawless people who are looking to destroy property and hurt others. We got to lock these people up, period. We just got to lock them up. We've got to build new prisons, or we got to build tents, or we got to build whatever we got to build and put guards around them. We got to say, look, you're simply not going to be able to disrupt American society that way. We won't allow it. Back in a moment.
It's my turn.
Here is your host for My Turn, Don Wildman.
We used to be a nation of dreamers. Some of that's missing now, but we have it as part of our heritage. Our forefathers, those who founded our country, were dreamers. They dreamed of a country where man would be free, where he could live in dignity and hope and promise of a better tomorrow. They lived that dream, believed in it so much they were willing to give their lives for it. Nothing could stop them from reaching out for that dream, not even all the combined power of the King of England. They took that dream, and with it they beat the unbeatable foe. They conquered the unconquerable land. They traveled the untravelable roads. What great dreamers they were. But they were not the greatest dreamers this world has had. There was a small group of men who had even greater dreams than did the founders of our country. Back nearly 2,000 years ago, there was a group of 11 men who had a dream, a great dream. They dreamed that they could conquer the world without ever lifting a sword or firing a gun. They dreamed that one day every man, woman, and child could and would share with them the new faith they had found. They dreamed that one day this world would be ruled by love. It was a great dream they had, so great, in fact, that the world laughed at them, ridiculed them, even persecuted and killed them. But the dream could not be destroyed. It lived on. They planted that dream of a world ruled by love in the hearts and minds of other individuals. The dream lived and grew. Soon that dream had conquered persons of all climates, all classes, all races. There are those today who are still dreaming that dream. They are inspired by a carpenter who touched the hearts of common people as no other man. He planted that dream in their hearts, nourished it, watched it grow. It is the dream of a world where men are brothers, where we help instead of hurt, share instead of steal, give instead of grab. It is a dream of a world ruled by brotherly love. A foolish dream? An unrealistic dream? An illogical dream? Yes, it's been called all of those things, but that doesn't stop people from dreaming it and from trying to make that dream come true. It is, in a way, an unfulfilled dream, but many still search after it. The call goes out from this Galilean carpenter today for more dreamers. Few there are who dare to give themselves to that dream. It seems unreachable to most people. It is certainly a big dream and requires the best there is in a person. For this reason, very few dare dream that dream, for it's a challenge, the world's greatest challenge. It isn't a dream for sissies or weaklings or the lazy. No, it's a dream for great people. If you're a dreamer looking for a dream to give yourself to, there's none greater in all the world. And one day, with his help, the dream will come true.
This has been My Turn with Don Wildman, a production of the American Family Association.
The Awakening.
The Awakening.
Download and listen at your leisure with the podcast page at AFR.net. Now, back to our host, Bishop E.W. Jackson.
By the way, folks, the President of the United States will be in Newport News, Virginia today. So for all you Virginians listening, head on over to Newport News, Virginia, and I'm sure there's going to be a big crowd, but you can get accommodated. And he's also going to be in Florida and Georgia, and apparently, of course, he lives in Washington, D.C. He's also going to be in Florida and Georgia today as well. So I trust that the president is going to make an impact wherever he goes. He draws very, very large crowds. And, you know, he's got a lot to say right now. So check him out. Go listen to what even if you're listening and you're not necessarily a fan of his, go listen to what he has to say and then compare that to what he does. Because I think people get hung up on, you know, his little tweets and quips and things he's capable of saying about people when he doesn't like them or they attack him. But pay attention to the record. That's ultimately what matters, isn't it? What the person actually does. Let me also mention, Eric brought up this issue of how do we win the hearts of the people out there doing this rioting. And I want to bring up something I brought up before, which is this, to me, is really what's happening in our country right now in 220 different locations, 570 riots. The number's probably up to about 580 now. This is like a cult. It really is. It's cult-like behavior. And if any of you knows anything about how you deal with people who have been caught up in cults, you don't persuade them. You have to deprogram them because they've been programmed. And anytime you can get people to kill themselves, kill their loved ones, share their wife, their daughters, their children with some cult leader, do all kinds of unspeakable things, that's a kind of mental illness. It really is. It's coming under undue influence and surrendering all rational thought. And that's what we've got here. We've got a surrender of rational thought. These people aren't advancing any kind of agenda. They're being used by people above them who are funding this stuff, who are sending out the weapons and the sticks and the bricks and signs and paying for all of that and showing up with U-Haul trucks to distribute this stuff in the streets. These are the people who know what they're doing. The people being used by them are just pawns. They're pawns in the game. They're caught up in the cult. And they think that somehow this is going to go well for them, just like Jim Jones knew that everybody following him would be subject to destruction at his command. But the people who were following him, they didn't know that. They thought they'd arrived at the truth. They thought they were doing something meaningful. And all they were doing was committing suicide for themselves and their families. And this is the same thing we see going on the streets. So what do you do with people who are mentally ill? You've got to put them away so they can't be a danger to themselves and others. And I mean that. I'm not talking about concentration camps, folks. I'm talking about due process, arresting people, charging people, and locking people up and ending this revolving door mess of having people walk through the system and come right back out to continue to commit murder and mayhem. The number is 888-589-8840. Let's come back to your calls. Kenny in Virginia. Thank you, Kenny, for calling. You've been waiting patiently. Welcome.
Hey, Bishop. How are you today, sir?
Doing great, Kenny. How are you?
I appreciate it. Thank God if you're a bloodbought believer in Christ, this is closest to hell we ever get, huh?
Amen. I like that. Amen. Amen.
Hey, I'm just curious why it seems lately that my rights stop when somebody else's opinion starts. And it's just, it's gotten so out of hand, like it's glorified now to be a criminal. And I've been listening to you speak about it. And, like, why is no one going after George Soros? I mean, everyone knows it's public knowledge that he's financing all this stuff. And it just seems like no one's Department of Justice or no one's going after him. Because I think it's treason, personally. In my mind, it's treason to try to tear apart your country.
Well, Kenny, I agree with you entirely. And I think a lot of us are puzzled by this. We don't, of course, prosecuting someone requires putting together a case and evidence and so forth. George Soros has a lot of money, and I'm not suggesting corruption on the part of the attorney general or anything like that, but he has a lot of money and a lot of influence in a lot of different spheres. I've seen people defend him who shocked me when they defended him. I thought, really? Where's that coming from? So I don't know what the dynamics are, but I agree with you. I think that George Soros is a traitor to our country. I think that George Soros ought to be investigated, and if evidence is found that he is actually engaged in an effort to destabilize and overthrow the United States government, that he needs to be tried and, if convicted, imprisoned. So I couldn't agree with you more, but the investigation has got to take place first. And I tell you something, folks. I don't have a whole lot of confidence in the director of the FBI, Director Wray. I'm not impressed. I'm really not. I'm really not impressed. I'm sure we've got a lot of great agents out there who are patriots and are trying to do their job. But I think that the guy who is in charge at the FBI right now, I mean, I'm not impressed. I'll leave it at that. I will simply leave it at that, because it seems to me the FBI needs to be aggressively investigating this stuff, because we're talking about people attempting to destabilize our entire society. And my goodness gracious, if that's not something that the FBI ought to be looking at, then what is? But thank you for the call. We appreciate it, Kenny. Let's go to Todd in Louisiana. Todd in Louisiana. Welcome, Todd. Todd, are you there? Okay. Let's go to Chelsea in Illinois. Chelsea, welcome.
Okay. Let's go to Chelsea.
Okay. Chelsea, are you there? Because I'm hearing myself playing back on your radio.
I'm here. Sorry.
There you go. Okay.
So I just wanted to talk. I have an unpopular opinion, and I think that part of the collapse of society happened with women in the workforce. When you don't have the mother in the home taking care of the kids, then who's taking care of the kids, and how are they being raised? They're just learning things from what they see at school or daycare or whatever. And then we have more people on welfare because instead of women, well, typically men would work and the wife would stay home and whatever. And but now they're single mothers because they feel they don't have to have a man to support the household. So then the women are having relationships with various men and having kids when they're not married. And it just leads to more people on welfare because either they can't support the household on one income or they're not able to work because they're taking care of these kids. And I just feel like a lot of our problems would not be happening right now if everything was the way that it traditionally was prior to this. And whenever I was a kid, I went to a church that was a lot more conservative, and they preached on that all the time, about the woman's job was to take care of the kids, take care of your spouse, take care of the home. And if you weren't able to work while being able to take care of those responsibilities, then you didn't need to work because your primary job was in the household.
All right, Chelsea, listen, you made your point, and I think it's a very valid one. My wife counsels young ladies in our church, has been counseling young ladies for a long time. When you get married, you ought to be prepared to stay home and take care of your children. But the society has changed so much now. The economy has become so much more complex. The costs have risen so much that often it seems to require two incomes to take care of a household and raise children and have enough money to do it. But look, your point is well taken. You add the fact that women are either by choice or by economic necessity are forced from the home. Who takes care of the children? Some surrogate person is raising the children. Then if the father's gone too, you got a double whammy. So you're right. We've got some cultural changes that have happened that have not helped create a stable society, and we need to go back to it. Back in a moment.
Whitestone Inn is, as the founders envisioned, a place of sanctuary for people in ministry.
Randall Murphy, editor of the AFA Journal.
Beautiful setting, just a presence, a sense of God's great creation.
Look for the article Whitestone Inn, Sanctuary for the Minister's Soul in the September edition of the AFA Journal, the official publication of the American Family Association. Visit afajournal.org.
Franklin Graham.
This is a critical time in our country.
Come pray with us at the Washington Prayer March 2020.
I'm asking Christians to come, praying for this nation and its leaders, that God would guide and direct, and that God would have mercy on us as a nation.
The Washington Prayer March 2020 with Franklin Graham, Saturday the 26th at noon Eastern, hosted by Sissy Graham Lynch and Governor Mike Huckabee. Watch it live at billygraham.org. billygraham.org.
The following is not an actor, but a real-life story from Trinity Debt Management.
I was finishing undergrad and got credit cards because I couldn't work full-time. So that started the credit card journey for me.
If you're in debt and you need help, call Trinity at 1-800-788-1813.
And then when I got married, we combined our credit card debt and it became impossible to pay off on our own. At that point, I was like, I don't know where to turn. And then I found Trinity.
Trinity will consolidate your accounts into one easy-to-manage monthly payment, reduce your interest, and possibly improve your credit score. You'll save thousands.
I initially was scared to call, and immediately I felt relief. I mean, in a matter of 3 years, we've already paid down $20,000 in credit card debt, which is huge.
Call Trinity at 1-800-788-1813. That's 1-800-788-1813.
You struggle with it, but you learn that there is forgiveness.
Anthony Levitino on Focus on the Family Minute.
But you learn something else. You can know truly in your heart that Jesus forgives me, and that's wonderful. But the hard part is forgiving yourself.
Oh, it's so true. And I think given the journey you've been given, what do you say to that person who whispers in your ear, I've done horrible things? Whatever it might be.
I don't care what you've done. It cannot compare to what I've done.
And then how?
And there is forgiveness if you ask for it and really repent. It won't happen all, you know, the forgiveness comes all at once. The change in you will take time.
And that's
But the
so
day
awesome.
Will come when you can forgive yourself.
It may take time, but you can come to a point of forgiving yourself. Hear more of Anthony's story at familyminute.org.
Back to The Awakening with Bishop E.W. Jackson on American Family Radio.
The number is 888-589-8840. It's First Amendment Friday. We're focusing primarily on your calls. Let me just add this based on the last caller. When I was in Boston, there was a prominent newscaster, a woman. She happened to be an American of African ancestry who said she was having a child and she was doing it on her own because you don't need a man to raise a child. I was asked in a radio interview what I thought of that, and I said, well, nothing could be more wrong. And it's a terrible example to these young girls who are having babies out of wedlock to hear a prominent celebrity say, you don't need a man to raise a child, because the fact of the matter is, you do. You need a husband and a wife. You need a man and a woman. You'd have thought I dropped an atomic bomb right on City Hall. I'm serious. People went ballistic. Who does he think he is? And she is a pioneering woman, and she's advancing us into a brave new world. I mean, you know, and so all I can say is you're just absolutely right that the culture has shifted so much. I became the villain for suggesting that you needed a man and a woman to raise a child, and she was a hero for suggesting that you don't. Go figure. Back to your calls. Let's go to Kelvin in Georgia. Kelvin, welcome.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Outstanding, outstanding. Beautiful TGIF. Thank you, Friday.
So what's on your mind today?
Well, I am a first-time caller, and I do want to make it very clear that as a first-time caller, your show is one that I just happened to come across on the radio while I was driving. Okay. And I have a problem with listening to conservative, opinions, because I listen to both sides. I think it's very important that you listen to both sides just as much as I may listen to CNN. I may occasionally turn the channel over to Fox just to see what the opinion is or what the conversation is, and then make a decision based on my own with all the information.
All right, Kelvin, I got you. Now, with that preamble out of the way, what's on your mind?
With that preamble out of the way, I'm a little taken with what you said earlier in your broadcast that the case between George Floyd and Breonna Taylor are different. They are the same, as well as they definitely shine a light on how minorities are treated by the police from a policeman's level, from the street cop level, and then also all the way back up to how they are judged and how those cases are handled from the courts. So when you talk about systemic racism and structural racism, I think the two are definitely connected, but even
Kelvin, hold on, because you're throwing out a lot of stuff, and we're not going to be able to cover it if I don't interrupt you and get to some of it. Well, factually, as somebody who practiced law for 15 years, factually, they're very, very different cases, obviously. Factually, very different cases. I mean, you have one case in which the police are serving a warrant and somebody fires at them as they're going in. And I've said, you could debate whether the warrant should have been given and all of that, but once bullets are fired and a police officer is shot, it becomes a very different case than the George Floyd case. I mean, right, factually. So that's number one. But in terms of the response of the system, it's not like some dictator is doing this. You've got a jury that is looking at the facts and asking the question, has somebody committed murder? Has somebody done something that we feel they should go to jail for? I mean, so do you think one of the police officers should go to jail for the killing of Breonna Taylor, given all the facts and circumstances? Is that what you're saying to me?
Can I speak? Yeah, absolutely. Because, and if you allow me to make the point is, if I'm in my house in the middle of the night and someone comes banging on my door who did not identify themselves, I have every right to protect myself. And on top of that, the person that they were trying to serve the no-knock warrant on didn't even live there. There was no evidence that she had anything to do with his activity.
Well, hold on. It was a former boyfriend, number one. And number two, you're right. I mean, I think somebody comes and knocks on your door, but you also realize this. There were eyewitnesses who said they saw and heard the police announce themselves before going through the door. So here again, the facts matter. And you can't just say, yes, somebody ought to be arrested for murder. I mean, this is not like they went out on the street, found somebody, and shot them. This is a situation that maybe begins with administrative error, perhaps. But, you know, it just sounds to me like you're thinking of this racially rather than judicially. And let me add this point. See, I think what part of the mistake we make is we apply the 1950s circumstances to 2020. The fact of the matter is most police departments in inner cities across the country now have as many black officers as they do anybody else. They have black mayors. They have black city councilors. They have black people in charge of these things. And nobody is out there. You can't suggest to me that police officers now generally like Bull Connor out going to look to hunt down black people to kill. Now, this is a tragic situation, a terrible situation, but this is not like Bull Connor unleashing dogs from 60 years ago, unleashing dogs and water hoses on people who are protesting for their rights. So when you say systemic and structural racism, see, I think those are concepts that people throw out because they simply don't want to think through the actual facts of a case. It's easy to just, yes, this is structural racism. Well, what does that actually mean? I'll tell you what, I give you 30 seconds to give me a question, give me an answer to that particular point, and then I've got to go on to some of these other callers.
Well, I mean, again, I don't think it's going to make a difference because your mind is already made up.
Just give me an answer. Don't disparage me. Just give me an answer. What is structural and systemic racism?
What about systemic racism? What about it? I'm sorry?
What is it?
It is when you go into a court of law and expect to get equal justice, but you don't because of the color of your skin.
That's not an answer because you're saying when you go into a court of law and expect to get equal justice because of the color of your skin, you realize, for example, in the Michael Brown case, that many of the jurors who declared that officer had defended himself were in fact black. And do you realize, for example, that when they charged in Baltimore for the killing of that guy, that three, I think of the six officers, I think there were six officers involved, but three of them were black. I think you're stuck in the past. And I think today is a different day than what we faced in our country in the 1950s and 1960s. But here again, I'll tell you what I think structural racism is. I think structural racism and systemic racism is the and I don't mean to disparage you when I say this, but this is what I really believe. I believe it's the mental and psychological obsession with race that forces people to see that as the answer and the problem in every situation, no matter what the facts might be. So, but listen, thank you so much for the call, and please call me again, because I'd love to talk to you again about these issues. I don't agree with your perspective, but I do appreciate hearing it and responding to it. Thanks so much. Let's go to Umberto in, is that Iowa?
Yes. Hello?
Welcome.
Oh, how are you? How are you?
I'm doing great. Go right ahead, because we're down to a limited amount of time. So I want to give you a chance to speak.
I just want to come in. I was in Mexico last year, and something very scary is happening there. And my brother was going to the university there. And regarding racism, they are starting to teach in Mexico and in South America the black race is not completely a human race. And this is coming from a teacher from the United States of America, who are what you call the liberal persuasion. You know what I mean?
Wow.
This has been very popular. We've been reporting it and trying to tell people about it here, but no one's saying nothing about it. And this poison is spreading over the radio waves all over Latin America. And Cuba is pushing it something fierce on top of that. And it's...
Umberto, listen, forgive me, but you made some very good points. Call me earlier next time in the program. I appreciate the remarks. Fidel Castro was known to be a racist, And by the way, folks, I've still got maybe time to get one more call in. But Fidel Castro was known to be a racist. Che Guevara was known to be a racist. And in my view, the real racists in our country today are the liberals who, in whatever their explanation might be, and for that caller who just called me, you should need to hear this well, their attitude is that black people are simply not up to it, that we simply can't match up with other human beings, and we need this extra help because we're hopelessly victimized. We're victimized by slavery. We're victimized by the we've been denied rights for so long, we just can't. Folks, if that were true, you wouldn't have any successful black people who are the descendants of slaves in this country, if that were true. It's a lie. If that were true, the Irish would never have gotten over the potato famine. If that were true, the Jews would never have gotten over the Holocaust. If that were true, pick any group you want that's been the victim of pogroms, and that includes pretty much every demographic group you can think of, and everybody would still be suffering under the curse of what happened to their people in the past or their ethnic group in the past. Oh, we can't because this happened to us and that happened to us and they wouldn't let us. And it is nothing but a formula for failure, a formula for defeat before you even get started in the fight. And I will come against that for as long as there's breath in my body. Well, listen, God bless each and every one of you. Thank you all so much for your calls. And have a wonderful weekend. Go to church and enjoy yourself. And remember that we cannot be defeated if we will not quit, because we are on God's side.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.